shall call upon me, and I will answer him. Psalms 91:15. When people are not active, they wither in despair. Action leads to freedom. That is a most important point to remember when we begin to realize the great truth of what we are doing in this world, how we are reacting to things external to ourselves, how we fear, how we sit, we brood. We allow these things to prey upon our minds. And when I tell you that mind and disease is one and the same thing, you will realize the importance of what I'm going to say tonight. There is no difference between mind and disease. The body is mind modified, mind materialized, and disease is the expression in mind, not pictured in the body. That's the error that exists in the mind. The truth rectifies the error, and the error disappears. But one has to recognize and find the truth for themselves. I cannot give it to you, but I will show you the way. When we keep our minds active, there will be no time to despair. Despair leads to nervousness, and nervousness leads to inefficiency through fear. To become interestingly active, we release tensions and old habit patterns. Interestingly active means that you are caught up in your activity. You're no longer thinking about your ailments and your troubles. And therefore, you find that there is a tenseness that leaves you, and naturally the old habit patterns are broken up. The habit patterns are held in the brain, in the cerebellum, this portion of the brain here which becomes a mischievous minstrel for you. Because when the body becomes tensed, through your thinking, you think through your cerebrum, that nervous system, it causes then tension in the body. Then the body talks back to the cerebellum, and the cerebellum says yes. Consequently, it obeys and naturally creates inhibitions and misbehaviors which are pictured themselves in the body. First of all, it's in the mind, then it's in the brain, then it's in the nervous system, then it's in the body. One is all linked together, there's no separation anywhere. So therefore you see how your old troubles come about. If you believe in your trouble, you feed it with your belief. Yet there are many who cannot concentrate on any line of action, who fear everything, even their own shadows, and who are unable to do anything, to them this advice just causes more worry. And we lead them out of their difficulty through two ways I will show you. Some people will force themselves to go until they have a nervous breakdown. They struggle unaware of their inhibitions, their tense muscles, their habit patterns. They fail because they do not know how to find freedom in their activities. All the time they're tense, all the time they're worried, all the time they're doing anything, they're caught up in it. They're no longer free. The habit pattern is being increased daily. They struggle with their inhibitions. Those inhibitions they know that they feel, yet to struggle with them and struggle against them, giving them more power when they've got no power at all except the power they give them. The way to freedom through occupational therapy is simple. There is a right and a wrong way. One leads to health and happiness, and the other leads to breakdowns. When a breakdown occurs, the poor victim is mostly subjected to psychoanalysis. So everything is interpreted from a subconscious factor, what is in the subconscious mind. He does not want to work, regression to infantile behavior, etc., etc. This is what he's told. All the time, that is not the cause of the trouble. This method is erroneous and misleading, for the real cause is that he or she is working under a nervous tension. Tense mind, tense muscles lead to habit patterns and breakdowns. Cause is that he or she did not know how to relax at work, how to take off the tension at work, how not to worry. There are thousands of things that come into your own lives, at home, and your business places continuously, and then you catch on to them and you're lost in them. You're caught up in them, you do not know what you're doing. And you try to solve the problem with your outer consciousness, the superficial consciousness. You can never solve anything on the superficial consciousness, the consciousness that deals with the outer. You must go deeper into the deeper layers of consciousness and then find there the reality and solve it from there. Then you are no longer troubled because you see clearly what the cause is, and the cause is within yourself. Yet there are many who cannot concentrate. Learn to relax while you learn your trade or profession. Then your work will be fun. If you are tense while you learn, then your future work will be torture. A shorthand typist who learns how to relax will take down much faster and more correctly in a relaxed state. Tense mind puts you off your track. A tense mind makes cerebellum misbehave. A tense mind takes away that control, that pure thinking that enables you to think correctly. When you are relaxed at work, you begin to like it. If you are tense at work, you begin to dislike it. You cannot have freedom while your muscles are tense. Then you are fighting on two fronts. It is fatal. The remedy is learn how to relax. Carry this relaxation over into your work and play. Learn how to relax. I've given you a system that will enable you to overcome your difficulties. When one has a breakdown through occupational anxiety, tension, he or she is generally given a period of rest to recover. But this period of rest will be of no value unless one is taught how to relax, how to release the tensions, how to reason divinely, how to learn to reach the deeper layers of consciousness and not always being on the surface. When this is not done, one returns to work in a similar state as when one left it. Consequently, a return of the trouble is inevitable. You know perfectly well how many people go for a rest. You better go for a rest. They go for a rest. What happens? They come back and they start on the same old grind and they get another breakdown. Sure as you are alive, they are there in a breakdown. A person came to see me yesterday in Johannesburg. He had what he called a heart complex. A person is always thinking that the heart's always upside down, too large or too small, or something wrong with it. It doesn't pump properly, or the mind is caught up in it. 4 years ago, he went to a doctor because he had a pain in his heart. The doctor told him, "You have enlarged heart." So he read all about this enlarged heart, what it would be, and he got into his mind what it was. He couldn't sleep at night because of the trouble. And he hasn't hardly ever slept since because he's been thinking about his heart. So he's got a heart complex. After a while, he went to a specialist, and the specialist x-rayed him, and he told him he's got no enlarged heart at all. So he went back to him again, and the specialist said to him, "There's nothing wrong with your heart. Get the hell out of here." But that didn't cure him, the poor devil. He couldn't be cured with that, because he couldn't walk from here to the end of that room, because he had a heart complex. The error was so strongly embedded in his mind that he couldn't walk from here to the end of that room. I told him, first of all, get up and walk around the room. And before he could get up, he had to sit down. I showed him where his trouble was. I told him how the habit pattern arranged, how his mind came into the question, how he got this heart complex. And then I treated him, worked on the nerves of his heart, and I listened to his heart and said, now, there's nothing wrong with your heart. Now, I want you to get out from here, go walk down to the bottom of Russick Street, and walk back again and come and see me. If you come in here, then I say you're cured. So he walked down to the bottom of Russell Street, walked back again, and he came into the room. And how do you feel? And he says, I feel fine. I says, well, you're cured. There's nothing wrong with you. Heart complex was completely removed in one treatment. And there is hundreds of cases that can be removed in the same way. Showing that the habit pattern is an error, it can be destroyed through the truth of proper relaxation, divine reasoning, and understanding. But to tell a fellow, there's nothing wrong with your heart, get the hell out of here, is of no value to anybody. And he was just the same. But when he got understanding, he was cured. And that's what most of you want, is the understanding. The remedy is a period spent on learning how to live. 2 weeks in learning how to live is better than a year of rest with no such guide. Most people use much more energy than is necessary when they work. They use muscles that are not needed for their job. They sit or stand in awkward positions, unaware that their muscles are tensed. They're continually tapping on the floor, their feet is always going, they're twisting themselves around, they're doing all sorts of things while the energy is being spent up. Shows entirely a lack of understanding. Here you have a habit pattern expressing itself out through nervousness. If you have any of those things whereby you're always writing or something, or you're always tapping something, or you're always moving or making movements that are unnecessary, check yourself up and see why you're doing it. If you're always sitting in a tensed form, sitting with your muscles all tensed, then you're using up energy. That is a habit pattern that's sure going to bring in trouble. When you are relaxed, you're free. When you can discern what you are doing, when you can discern the relative, then you will know what reality is. When Jesus went into the wilderness, 40 days and 40 nights, he went in for one purpose. That was to find his true self, completely, this that was real. When he is being baptized by John, naturally, he had to be baptized by John to become part of the whole. Otherwise, he couldn't be of any value to anybody. He must become you and me. He must go into the river and be baptized the same as you or we would be baptized. Otherwise, we stood aside, he would have been of no value. I am different to the other people. Oh no, I can't go in, I can't be baptized. But he insisted on John baptizing him. Otherwise, his work would have been of no avail. But on that time when he prayed, naturally, there was a voice that said, this is my beloved son, whom I am well pleased. Here was a devotion, naturally, where there are crowds of people in devotion, there is always a spiritual force there waiting to express itself. And sometimes the higher spiritual force will be able to use the ectoplasm around so that the sound of the voice can be heard, knowing as the direct voice. That was the direct voice that was heard by the multitude. It was not only an incident, it was something that was meant for the whole of creation. For the simple reason it couldn't have lasted for 2,000 years if it was not. It was just an ordinary incident that you have a find in your own circle when you can have a direct voice. It means nothing. But here it was a tremendous thing. It meant something so astonishing and so great that it's lasted 2,000 years and is as fresh today as it happened there at the very moment 2,000 years ago. Then he went into the desert. Into the wilderness, into solitude, to find this great and wonderful truth. And it says that the devil tempted him. Now we know perfectly well that in every case of all religious denominations, it always comes as the devil something external to man's self. But when you go back and you take the Greek interpretation, and you read what the devil means in the Greek, and it means diabolos, which means the false one. Not separate from the individual, but the false one in the individual. And this was the outer consciousness that Jesus knew that he existed also, the flesh, the brain, the body, the desire for things. So he had, in his state of complete devotion, he had to discern everything that was relative. He could discern everything that was relative. He discerned everything external to himself, and then he found that what was real, the great Spirit, the Spirit of God that was in each and every one, and then he knew that he was the Christ of God. But it's necessary to reach this particular state if you want to know the truth. So he found it completely. But yet, you see, he was still tempted. Naturally, when a person is in a state of devotion, the pangs of hunger do not exist. I know that. When I was in Tibet, I had 7 days of continuous devotion. And during that period, I never felt the pangs of hunger at all. But after it was over, then I felt the body began to ask for food. Naturally, Jesus felt 40 days and 40 nights was a very long period. And then found that he desired food. And with his great spiritual knowledge and understanding, he knew that he could, by transmutation, change the very stones into bread. That was a simple thing for him to do. Naturally, it's a simple thing for any master to do under the circumstances when he knows the complete truth of his own creative ability. Everything around him, he has power to change, to transmute by the power of the Spirit that was within. And therefore, he said, change the stones to bread, and you shall eat. And what did he say? I shall not. They shall not live by bread alone, but by the very word of God. That very word of God. Here was the word it was in the beginning, the life. The life which John talks about. It is the word that was in the beginning, the word that was God, and that very word was made flesh. This was the bread he should live by. And therefore he then caused this other self, this self, which wanted food to feed the body, to be silent. And therefore it was silent. And then it states that he was taken up to the mountain and shown the whole of the world, and says, there's a world for you, you can have it. He knew perfectly well within himself that he could conquer the whole world, the external world, and the world would be under his feet. Because of his own spiritual power, he could do anything. Then he turned upon that self again, because he knew this, if he did it, he could even escape the cross. He could be the greatest man on earth, and everyone would recognize him. But there was something greater. He says, I am not of this world. You shall not tempt the Lord thy God. He knew that he had to go through the whole particular process of what he came into the world to do. Therefore, he threw that aside. Then he was taken to the pinnacle of the temple, and he said, throw yourself down. He knew perfectly well by the power of levitation that he would land on his feet and land on his toes. And he would not be happy, because levitation is a natural thing for those who have conquered the complete relative. He was a master of masters. And what happened? He says, this will be a miracle and the people believe you. But he knew perfectly well, said to himself, how could a miracle change a belief? If I perform a miracle at this moment, would it change your belief? No, you go out and say it was a wonderful thing, but you will still have your beliefs. For the simple reason that belief cannot be changed through understanding. And he knew it, that no miracle would be of any value to any individual, because they were steeped in their beliefs. We know him for what he is, and what he did, what he conquered. Everyone can conquer, and you know that you can discern all these things that are down to yourself. The tree of knowledge of good and evil, that's the thing that he was changing continuously. He saw it, and therefore he brushed it aside, and he took then the tree of life. And he said, in his own words, this is the tree of life, the spring of living water that will rise into eternal life. And here you are now, and you ask me those questions. Don't you realize this, that in yourselves lies this great mighty power, the divine nature in yourself? That's the reality. But if you try to solve your problems with the outer self or the outer consciousness dealing with the relative things, then you will never solve them at all. You have to get into the deeper state of consciousness, that state of consciousness that Jesus knew, that state of consciousness that I know. I know that state of consciousness. And it says that the devil left him for a while. Naturally, it will come back because his outer self was always with him, but he could always know perfectly well what the relative self was. But unless you discern these things, how can you understand? When you begin to learn relaxation, you will become conscious of your tension. And naturally you will let go. You will be able to give proper attention to your work when your muscle tensions are released. They are no longer causing internal reaction that leads to further tension and eventually to breakdowns in mind and body. When changing from one occupation to another, one often finds difficulties because the work is unfamiliar. Fear of doing things wrong, fear, resentment, antagonisms, muscular tensions, these all lead to breakdown in health through nervousness. Occupational therapy is the cure. But what kind of occupational therapy? Relaxed attention, of course. Learning all one can about the job. Relaxed attention leads to interest, interest leads to action, action leads to freedom. Any kind of work is fun when you learn to relax. Relaxed attention leads to efficiency. You see your possibilities, your opportunities for self-development. Even the neurotic housewife will find joy in learning the scientific side of homemaking. Many wives in the home make themselves miserable, as well as the whole family, because they just will not take time to learn new methods, new ideas. Relaxed attention creates interest. Interest creates action. Action creates freedom. Only when they are caught up in their so-called daily grind are they self-retarded. Activity that is not self-retarded frees you from self-imposed shackles. Every time you do anything, your muscles tell your cerebellum. If you scowl or smile, you may not be conscious that your muscles are reporting what is taking place. Nevertheless, there are messages carried to the brain centers which cause inhibitions or freedom. So when you scowl, you create something in your cerebellum. When you smile, you create something in your cerebellum too. For the simple reason, it is what you do. The attitude of your mind is so essential in your work and play, in your daily living. Your cerebellum knows and is quick to act on the messages received, by sending messages to all parts of the body, to all your organs, and they act accordingly, then the body begins to talk back. It tells the body what to do. When you scowl, it enters your cerebellum. Your cerebellum sends messages to your body and say, it's scowling. The whole of your body begins to scowl too. That is the mind. Therefore, can you separate disease from your mind and your brain and nervous system or your body? Of course you can't. It's not an impossibility. One and the same. The sooner you learn that, the better. So when the body feels the scowl, it takes on the scowl and then talks back to the brain. And then the brain says, all right, this is my habit pattern. Just like that fellow yesterday who had this heart complex, which was truly a habit pattern, and it lasted him for 4 years. And in one treatment, he was completely cured. The complex had disappeared. The error was eliminated. It was like the error in a sum. I said, well, when your sum is corrected, where does the error go to? He says, well, I don't know. He says, it just disappears. I says, well, your trouble just disappeared too. Just exactly the same. There's more in what I'm telling you than what you think. You may be listening to me, but you're not taking it all in. If you do, you will find how good it is for you. When you are happily sailing through your work in a relaxed and peaceful manner, health-giving messages are sent to all parts of the body. Thereby, inner adjustments are made, releasing healthy impulses. Then the cerebrum is advised of the feeling of well-being established. So you are set free from your self-hypnotic inhibitions and ideas. Relaxed attention is the key to freedom. Relaxed attention is more easily obtained when one has a knowledge of the self. How are you going to have a knowledge of the self? discern all your thinking, your thoughts, your ambitions, your emotions, and what is behind the emotions and all the motives. That's the self. Because the mind obeys the will of one who knows. The will is not something that is forced upon the mind. Only understanding enables the mind to function freely. The mind is then directed to observe, dissect, analyze, and draw to itself every bit of possible information regarding the thing observed. And I cannot lay too much stress on the acquirement of this great faculty of relaxed attention. When you are studying any particular subject, you get very tense. What happens to that tension? You get tired. In your study, you fall off to sleep. You wake up relaxed. You try again, but still you do not know how to study. You do not understand relaxed attention. Tensed attention is of no value. It's relaxed attention that enables you to grasp what is true, enables you to learn, enables you to study, enables you to acquire the facts. When the sun's rays are focused through a magnifying glass, the point where the concentrated rays strike will burn a hole in any piece of paper. So does the mind penetrate the details when it is directed to each detail in turn. That is relaxed attention. Relaxed attention enables the mind to attend to each detail at a time. But if the attention is spread over a large area, it becomes tense and strained. The same happens to the eye. If you try to see too much by spreading your vision, you strain your eye muscles, and your eyesight is impaired. Same with your brain, same with your mind. But if you focus your sight on the smallest detail at a time, the eye will relax and will convey to the mind the accuracy of what it sees. Your sight will improve. With this same practice, so does the mind improve in a similar manner. Now do you understand what relaxed attention means? Attention does not fasten itself to uninteresting objects or subjects. Therefore, interest must be created. And this is done through relaxed attention. When the mind becomes absorbed in activity, voluntary attention is increased. Interest creates voluntary attention. Voluntary attention, which is directed toward an uninteresting subject, causes what we call a brain spasm. That is to say, where there is a black spot in the brain, it will not work. Most minds have not been trained to bear prolonged voluntary attention because a habit of inattention has been created through tension. I'll read that again, see if you can grasp. Most minds have not been trained to bear prolonged voluntary attention because a habit of inattention has been created through tension. Therefore, patient practice is essential. Do not bite off too much at a time, as the saying goes. Do not bite off more than you can chew, because your mouth will be too full. So it is. A lot of people who are trying to cram themselves, they have stomach troubles, for the simple reason that they can't digest what is in their mind, therefore they can't digest their food. The brain and the stomach is exactly the same. This is the Master's teaching. This is what I went through myself in my sojourn with the Master. I'm giving you a tremendous lot of knowledge. If you follow it out, you'll find how easy it is. And it's simple. It is living perfectly. That's all. Voluntary attention can become strained through tension. Therefore, it is often advisable to let the attention move involuntarily for a few moments till tension disappears. When the person is directing their attention, which is voluntary attention, directing their attention to a particular subject or object, there is a strain time where there is tension. Then when you try to do more work under that state of tension, you're doing more harm to your brain and your nervous system than what you think. What do you do then? Then you let the attention move to involuntary, to anything that comes into the mind. Then you find that your attention is no longer strained, it becomes relaxed attention. Then you can apply yourself again and you'll find how easy it is to work that way. If teachers could only understand this, could allow their students to know it, what brilliant people could be in the world. How many teachers know it? That's all I ask. I have said that interest develops attention. So does attention develop interest? And this you can prove for yourself. Give a little voluntary relaxed attention to an object or subject. Persevere with this voluntary relaxed attention and you will find points of interest rising before you. Many new phases and aspects are seen that hold your interest. Look for the interesting features of an uninteresting subject or object, and soon all phases will become interesting. With this method, your will is developed in a healthy manner and will increase in strength as the mind is trained to do its bidding. The will is always strong, but it is not developed in the individual because of lack of application. The application of attention is the pathway to genius. When the mind is held interestingly on some particular object or subject, extraneous thoughts are closed out. I'll have more to say about this aspect of our work later on. Now I must direct you here to cleanse your mind so that you can focus your attention through it. Last week I directed you to analyze the not I things. You began to see what was relative. The I must be able to use its instrument, the mind. But before this can be done effectively, we must have a mental house clearing. By doing so, wonderful results can be obtained, and we will now proceed to take the exercise that will give this desired results. The mind of most people resembles an untrained horse or a frisky monkey, which refuses to be taught at first. In training a horse, you give it sufficient rein to allow it to move in any way it pleases at first, gently holding it in the direction you want it to go. As it slows down, you respond to your direction. The mind is much the same. I remember in my youth when I was learning to ride a horse, they give me what we call our old racehorse that was put out into the grass. It wasn't very old. The reason why it was put out in the grass was the fact that when it got the bit between its teeth, it went for the gallop and there was nobody could pull it in. So they give me this horse. So I got into this horse and I was riding along lovely and good. And when he got his bit in the mouth, he started to gallop. And he galloped. And he galloped. And after I kept him galloping, I thought I was going to pull him in. But I made him go. And I made him go. And I had the whip with me and I made him go still. And I made him go still round that paddock and round that paddock until he was dead beat. And when he was dead beat, he gave it up. That horse never took the bit in his mouth anymore. Not with me anyway. And when I came back the next time, he was looking for me. And when I came near the fence, he was snorting and followed me all over the place. That shows you, doesn't it? Seat yourself in a comfortable chair and relax your whole body. Take off all tension. By this time you will know where the tensions are. Make no effort to control the mind. Let it run along till it exhausts its efforts. It will jump from one thing to another at first, but soon it will slow down and look for orders from you. The mind may take a little time at first to quieten down, but each time you practice, you find it will quieten down in a much shorter time. You will gain two important things with this exercise. It will release your tensions and you will acquire relaxed attention. That is the great thing, to find relaxed attention. Because in your mind, there are many things that prevent you from having relaxed attention. There are tensions in your mind that are preventing you from having relaxed attention. Can you study when your mind is troubled and tensed? Of course you can't. Try it and see, you'll soon find how stupid it is. When the mind is calmed down, fix the thought on the eye, see it independent and superior to the mind and body and directing both. See the I am as real, divine power, love, wisdom. The result will be a most powerful focusing of thought and realization of reality. Practice makes perfect. Make it a daily habit and see how wonderful you grow in understanding. Do not fall into the error of saying that you are a part of life. I am an atom of life. The fact is you are life. And life is not separated at all. The one life is expressing itself through everyone. That which makes us fundamentally united and real. But it is the wonderful truth that so many people make the mistake. And they say, you know, I'm a spark. You know, I'm a flame. And this and that. We don't even know what they are. But when you realize this fact that you are life, even if you do not know what it is, you are it. Just as you do not know what electricity is, you know that's a light. But you can't tell me what a light is. But you know that it is. When you have seen me, you have seen the Father. When I see you, I have seen the Father. I know there is no division in reality. You have to reach into the deeper layers of consciousness to find that reality. And how do you do it? By discerning the relative, and by no other way. people will go and concentrate and meditate. What are they meditating upon? Nothing. Nothing. Life is not divided. You enter into complete freedom through wholeness. I and the Father are one. Benediction. O blessed one, thou hast shown me the way to shed the personal in order to become impersonal. Thou hast shown me the way to cast aside the limited in order to expand into the unlimited. Not until the imperfect, the small, the contracted, the personal is surpassed, can I know thy divine presence. Will I say that again? Yes, I will. Not until the imperfect, the small, the contracted, the personal is surpassed, can I know thy divine presence. In thee alone lies life, immortality. In the separate self alone lies death. I shall become what thou art within me. Yet no human words can interpret thy invisible nature. Only thy voiceless messages can reveal thy presence. O blessed.